Thank you, Jim. And last but not least, we have David French.
Good morning. I'm going to begin, as every decent lawyer should, with a statement of blunt alarmism. I believe that we are entering a period of American history in which our identity as a unified nation and our existence as a unified nation is at an increasing level of risk. In other words, that we cannot take for granted that the United States of America, as 50 states unified under one national government, will continue indefinitely into the future. Why is that? I believe we're also entering a time where there is an increasing disagreement amongst our citizens about what America has been, what America is, and what America should be, and what's the critical corollary to that, whether we should even like each other in the first place. And that last critical corollary is vitally important to health, to the health of national unity, to the existence of national unity. Now, let's back up a little bit. Why would I be so alarmist? I'm going to be alarmist because I think that increasingly Americans, left and right, are coming at this nation from very different starting presumptions as to what a nation is and should be, and critically, whether they should like it. Okay? So here is a view of national governance and national existence that I believe is increasingly emerging and on what I would call sort of the transnational liberal elite. And that a government is merely, I mean, a nation is merely one form of government, and your affection for it should be directly related to its historic and present commitment to contemporary notions of social justice. And that if the past and the present are not matching the contemporary commitment to social justice, even national forms should be disregarded and remade and reshaped and overcome in the quest to pursue social justice. And here's what's critical about it. In this formulation, there is no default sense of affection for your nation or your fellow citizens. Let me give you some real-world examples of what this looks like. When I was president of FIRE, we lived in Center City, Philadelphia. Our apartment was two blocks from the Liberty Bell and Independence Hall. I mean, it should have been like an epicenter of volcanic American patriotism. It was not. My oldest daughter went to Independence Charter School. We won a lottery. We were able to get into a charter school and escape the Borg of the larger Philadelphia public school system. And there was some discussion, this was not that far after 9/11, over whether at a school program the students should sing God Bless America. Now, there were two objections to this. One of them I anticipated, and that was this notion that why would we inject God into anything? And then the other one kind of surprised me, and that was, why would we sing God Bless America? There's nothing special about America. God should bless every nation equally. And I was taken aback by that a little bit. I remember responding, if you believe in God, do you ask for God to bless your family? Or do you just sort of back up and say, you know, every family's of equal worth, God just generally bless us all? Is there any notion of particular affection here? And I began to notice a pattern in dealing with people in academia, people in a government, in liberal elite culture. There was no default affection for the United States of America. And in fact, there was a lot of default loathing of this country, and even loathing of the people who had that sense of default affection. Now, what's a different view? A different view is, and this is something that I think that is not unique to the United States of America, and that is a nation is a fellowship of people bound by a combination of faith, history, culture, and geography for which there is a default affection and loyalty, barring compelling reasons to the contrary. In other words, it's almost like your family. You didn't choose your family. You're born into your family, unless you're an immigrant. And there's a default sense of affection for your family. It doesn't mean you're blind to your mother's faults, although my mother has almost none. But there is a default sense of affection. Now, there's an American patriotic corollary, I believe, to this sort of more normal sense of national identity. And the American patriotic corollary would be that America is uniquely worth celebrating because of its historic and present commitment to individual liberty with international borders and resistance to tyranny more broadly. And so if you have these two separate views of what we are and have been versus and two separate notions of affection, it stands to reason that those are going to conflict and eventually begin a process of separation unless we can create an environment where there is mutual flourishing across differences, where we have a legal structure, a legal superstructure, a national superstructure that allows for flourishing, individual flourishing, even across very different ideas about what this nation is and should be. And I think that that is where we are beginning to divide. We are emerging into a legal superstructure and a legal transformation of this country in which the stakes of any given election are dramatically raised, because what happens when we have an enormous national government where the executive is in a position of near absolute primacy, aided and abetted by the Supreme Court of the United States, that there is less and less space for a dissenter in that environment or a dissenting community in that environment unless the executive begins to intentionally carve out that space. And that's where I think, not to get excessively focused on the present administration, but I think that's where we're beginning to see a real breakdown in these bonds of national fellowship. We see it in the Obergefell ruling, and we see it really emerging in not just the Obergefell ruling, but also the governmental response, for example, to the sexual revolution, where there is emerging a political view and an ideology that says that not only should there be greater sexual liberty, but that dissenters from that liberty don't have any place in the political and public and even economic life of this country, and that they should be shunned and marginalized to the same extent that this nation, after the Civil War and after Jim Crow, shunned and marginalized white supremacists. And that this point of view has taken such hold over sections of our country that it is literally the case now, for example, in elite higher education, that the very existence of, for example, Orthodox Christian organizations on those campuses is in grave doubt. They cling by their fingernails to their very existence in these vitally important cultural institutions. In some entire areas of the American economy, if you're going to identify as a person of particular ideas, you are risking your job. You're risking your presence in that particular economy. And that is breeding antipathy. That is breeding dislike. That is breeding a distaste for each other. And it is breeding also something else that is pernicious to the existence of the United States as a unified country. It is breeding geographic sorting based on ideas and ideology. Now, I am a living example of a geographic sorter. In 2005, I was living in the middle of Philadelphia, part of what I would call the 8% I think it's the voting in that particular precinct was 92% left, 8% right. So I was part of the 8%. And I was also enlisted in the United States Army, a reserve officer, and I was preparing to deploy to Iraq. And we decided to leave Philadelphia and move to a place closer to my home where, critically, we also felt that there would be much greater acceptance of our family and our family's choices, and that we wouldn't have to be at home teaching against what my children were learning in school. And I live around an awful lot of people who've made a similar choice. And it's a logical choice, and it's a rational choice, but it is a choice that is impairing our national unity. We're now not only less likely, we're not only more polarized than we've been in any time of 30 to 40 to 50 years. In other words, in a really interesting Pew study showed that Republicans dislike Democrats more than they have in the last 30 years, and Democrats dislike Republicans more than they have in the last 30 years. We're also more likely to be geographically segregated, even down to the precinct, than at any time since World War II. So there is an increasing sense of separation. And so when you have a great and increasing polarization combined with an increasingly leftist view of national worth, which is we're going to only be good when people like me are excluded from the picture, are silenced, and then our policies are not don't come anywhere close to enactment, that you are breeding division. And it's not just breeding division on national and political lines. There's increasing division along religious lines. Now, there was a lot of trumpeting recently about the Pew Foundation study that showed that there was a rise of nuns, that people who were leaving organized religion. And the headlines there again and again were, America's becoming more secular, Americans becoming more secular. But when you actually dug down in the data, you found something a little bit different. Leah Labresco is a mathematician who writes for the 538 website, which for, if you're a statistics junkie, you know the 538 website, did some interesting number crunching on the trends. That if you looked at those worldviews, those religious worldviews that tended to attract followers versus the attrition that they suffer, that if you project forward current trends, America will become both more secular and more religious. How's that possible? That the real attrition is not occurring. Let's say that there are the alls and the nones, and then there are the sums. And the sums, the people who are of nominal faith, are tending to move in one of the directions of either no faith or the more devout forms of faith, such as evangelical Christianity. So that if you project forward, the largest entities will be the nuns and the alls. Again, increased polarization on every front. What can we do about this? What can we do about this? Well, one of thing that we can do is we can rediscover federalism. We're going to have to. We're going to have to, because if we do not, the stakes will only continue to grow with each and every political election. We have to rediscover federalism. We have to allow Mississippi to be Mississippi, and we have to allow Vermont to be Vermont, and we have to create a situation in which we actually take a degree of pride in the fact that we have diverse viewpoints in our citizenry, not just diverse skin colors and backgrounds. We have to give each other space to live out our lives and our ideologies, and to succeed or fail based on those ideologies without interference and domination from a central government. If we don't do that, the geographic sorting is going to continue, but against an atmosphere of fear, that even moving to Tennessee is not going to allow me to escape fully or even sufficiently the consequences of our increased polarization. And so that's why I am somewhat alarmist, maybe more alarmist right now. I don't think this is something that's imminent. But I have trouble seeing a single important social and cultural trend that points our nation towards increased unity. I'd be happy to hear from someone here to tell me of one trend that's pointing us towards increased unity. But every trend that I am viewing and seeing, including the very definition or notion of what a nation is or should be, is trending towards increasing apathy or antipathy. Let me close with this. I think there's an interesting test about whether or not a person feels affection for another human being merely because they're an American. Let's call it the Champs-Élysées test. Okay, so what is that? I remember the first time I was there. And although I think Paris is beautiful, it's not America. And when I was there for a while, I began to miss home. And I'll never forget leaving my hotel one of the early days, one of the first days after I really began to miss home. And I was so glad to see a bunch of other Americans walking around. I felt affection for them just because they were part of my broad family. I was happy to see them, fanny packs and all, the maps, the inability to know where they were going, and because I was the same way. Now, that is a situation where a human being, on a very basic level, feels a sense of affection for another person because they're a part of their national family. But there's a different Paris test, and I have seen this also, and it is the person who is sitting, sipping a cup of coffee, and who looks up and sees an American and rolls their eyes. Because they're the wrong kind of American. They're the ones that's not the citizen of the world, that is appropriately and respectfully recognizing there's nothing superior to American culture over French culture, and in fact, French culture is infinitely superior to American culture, and we have lots to learn from the French, but is sitting there with the fanny pack and the loud voice and the map, just as a tourist. How dare they? They need to grow up and become more sophisticated. And that sounds simplistic, but that's where national bonds are formed and broken, at this deep emotional level, this deep affection. There's been much written, especially since Charleston, about why the United States split in 1861. And of course, slavery was the core issue. I don't think anyone seriously disputes that, but why then? Why 1861? One of the reasons is the white citizens of the American South felt that the North, Northern citizens, not only hated and loathed them, but wanted them dead. John Brown's raid on Harper's Ferry and his treatment with almost hero worship from some quarters of the North was treated with an incredible sense of alarm on the South, because they interpreted John Brown's raid as an attempt at mass murder, an attempt to create a slave rebellion as Nat Turner's slave rebellion did, hack to death with hatchets and knives and shoot with muskets, women and children. And so they looked at the Northern hero worship of John Brown, and they said, these people want us dead. And that was a strong emotional undercurrent to this tragic act of national division. We're not there now, but there are an awful lot of Americans like me, people of evangelical faith, who look at a national superstructure governed by a particular ideology, and I say, these people want me. Unless I change and conform to their ideas, silenced, out of a job, unable to educate my children in the way that I would like to see them educated, and unable to advocate and pronounce my deepest beliefs. Let me ask you, is that a formula